You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Tuesday morning, July 29th, 2025. It's another beautiful morning to have you here up north. Live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, or listening or watching us on all the other different platforms out there. We appreciate you starting your Tuesday morning here. I got a question for you and for producer Parker Olson in Madison Studio A2. Have you ever had a dry burrito? And I say that because I didn't know there was a difference between a wet burrito and a dry burrito till about 5 minutes ago. When I think of a burrito, don't you think of the thing that's on a plate smothered in enchilada sauce?
Yeah.
That's apparently a wet burrito, and a dry burrito.
No enchilada.
Is something that you can, no sauce. You can, you're supposed to, it's a handheld. You can walk and eat it. That, I mean, isn't that?
You know what? I understand this distinction. I think this is okay. I have nothing wrong with this. I think this is fine. I have no notes.
I know you're going, where does this come from? Well, we're working on some of the more popular stories on Up North News social media feeds in the past
week. This is very important. Yeah.
And it included one about best wet burrito. And I was like, what do they mean by wet burrito? I mean, every burrito is covered with sauce. But now I'm thinking, is it like is not Chipotle, like Qdoba? Aren't there some that make these big old beast of things that you're supposedly able to eat by hand, but nobody ever does because they're such monsters?
I don't know that to be a fact. However, I am well aware of American food portions, and I'm sure that's correct. Yes.
That does make sense now as well. Yeah, Alicia puts on YouTube, oh, I didn't know that was considered a dry burrito, but it makes sense. And she also says, good morning. It is cooler this morning where she is in Northeast Wisconsin, but it is humid. And yes, that is definitely the case after rain and thunderstorms went through. You had some down by you in Madison as well?
A little bit, yeah. Yesterday I got kind of lucky. I park outside. I stepped into my car as the first raindrop happened, and then it started to rain as I drove away. Today, a little less lucky, had to use the umbrella to get to the car.
Good thing you're not made of sugar, right?
I mean, yeah, I would melt.
We can survive a little bit of rain like this. The rain is working its way through the southeastern third of the state right now. A very strong line of storms, high winds, some damage reported to the west of the Chippewa Valley. And thankfully, it was starting to fizzle out about the time it came through Chippewa Falls. So for as big and angry a red blob as it looked on the radar, we only ended up with a quarter inch of rain here on Lake Wissota. Other places obviously got a lot more, but here's the thing from meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Her state forecast is really just kind of centered on a single word, relief. Relief from the heat, relief from the stormy weather, cooler, drier, more pleasant. With one exception, possibly the southern third of Wisconsin has one more shot at storms tonight, or the storms could just miss to the south. But here is her statewide forecast. Showers ending and more sun. The highs will be about 80 degrees up north, mid-80s south, with a northwest wind at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Then for tonight, the comfortable air really starts to move in. Partly cloudy and comfortable. Lows tonight in the upper 50s up north, mid-60s south, with a light northerly breeze. And again, just quiet weather going forward from there. Right now here on Lake Wissota, it is 69 degrees, but still a little humid out there. Parker, I got to get this off my chest now because I don't want to bring it up tomorrow when Melissa Kay is here and we're talking about her rescue pigeon.
Yeah.
The Chippewa Humane Association has a rescue hamster project, if you like.
Okay.
I saw this on their Facebook page last night. I'm not kidding. This is an actual post. It has been updated to say that Hammy is now en route to a new house. But here's the original post. Hammy Hamilton needs a home and we need a break. This is not your average sweet and cuddly hamster post. This is a desperate plea from the staff at Chippewa Humane. Someone, anyone, please, all caps, adopt Hammy Hamilton. Hammy has bitten three staff members that we know of, and we're convinced he's keeping tally. He doesn't just nip, he strategizes. He thrives on fear, and we think he likes it that way. Let's be very clear. Hammy is not a good pet for a child. He watches us. We pray before opening his cage. He may be small, but his rage is mighty. We're looking for a hamster-savvy adult who understands that not all hamsters want snuggles and sunflower seeds. Hammy wants space. Hammy wants freedom. Hammy wants revenge. But don't let that small, adorable face deceive you. That is the face of a predator, not a friend. If you've got the experience, the bravery, and the grit to give Hammy Hamilton the life he deserves, or the life he demands, please reach out. You might just be his perfect match, or his next victim.
You made that up. That's
not
real.
I did not make up a word of
that.
You made that up. And as I bring up the post this morning, it says, update, Mr. Hamilton has received quite a few applications. Thank you all for helping him get to his new home. I will say, mostly jokingly, I would dare say more than a couple of those applications are from people who have a python for a pet, because what you've described there is not a pet. What you've described is lunch for somebody else's pet. Now, I know that's going to upset some people, and there were many posts in the comment section about how, you know, not every animal is supposed to be sweet and cuddly, and sometimes the best pet is the one, not that you actually physically pet, but just has some space and is there, is, you know, a little buddy to talk to. But Parker is currently wiping tears from his eyes.
I'm crying, Pat. That was so funny. Oh, my God.
Because if nothing else, whoever posted this at the Chippewa Humane Facebook account needs to do this more.
Yeah.
We need more posts. And yes, you can write posts for the cuddly friendly ones, but we really want more posts for the not cuddly ones, for the potential predators in waiting. I mean, that's honesty. That's honest advertising right there. We got this hamster. It's a trained killer, but it could be your next buddy. You know,
this is not for kids
or musky bait, whatever the case. Either way, he's here.
This thing is dangerous as all hell. Please get it off our hands and into your home.
Literally, please, literally get it off our hands. I love that they say this is not a good pet for a child, to which, again, other people are like thinking of their, you know, spoiled brat little nephew or niece and going, oh, I have an idea. I'm just a cynical person that way. But I just thought this was, it's hilarious and so refreshing. Honestly, there were other people that put posts up thanking them for the honesty, because they talked about getting pets, usually dogs, where they felt like the shelter, not this one, but wherever they got their dog, was not completely on the up and up about what a problem this particular animal would be. Like, they were trying to push it out the door.
Yeah.
Here at Chippewa Humane, they're like, this thing is a problem. It's going to take somebody special to take on Hammy.
Oh, that
Hammy,
is...
Hammy Hamilton the hamster.
Oh, God. Hammy Hamilton, if you're listening right now, I would love to meet you. You sound like... you sound like a little terrorist, and I think that's fantastic in a hamster. I don't want a well-behaved hamster. I want a hamster that is... just got a little bit of bite in there.
Yeah, he's got a little bite to him. That's for sure. So there you go.
Wow, I mean, Pat, thank you. You just made my day.
Look, I needed that too. When somebody, you know, a different Facebook friend posted it, and they were like, "This can't be real, right?"
No.
And I looked at it. I was like, "Yeah."
I expected you to say that the second post was apologizing for the first post.
Oh, yes. I mean, it wouldn't have surprised me at all saying, oh, this was a rogue volunteer. Obviously, Hammy Hampton is all snuggles and, you know, well, he'd be great. And you're looking at this cute little face here. You know, I mean, two of the three pictures are of a cute little face. The third one, he looks like...
He looks like the killer rabbit from Monty Python.
The killer rabbit from Monty Python, or like a tiny furry version of Jaws right before it attacks the guys on the boat. So... This from Luke Mathers on the text line. I had hamsters growing up, and they only bite when they're scared. Hammy just sounds like he needs a good home. So there you go. Again, Luke Mathers, Eagle Scout, would not feed Hammy Hamilton the hamster to a python. Would love it. Give it a home.
Luke is a far better man than you or I.
Yes. And now you see why we talked about this now and not tomorrow with Melissa Kay, whom we love dearly. And we appreciate that she rescued Lilu the pigeon, formerly named Paint Bucket.
Yeah.
Even though the pigeon is, seems to me, exhibiting Hammy-like tendencies. It hasn't nipped at her, but it also just won't even come out of its little shelter box or whatever.
Well, this pigeon is at a point that I didn't know pigeons got to. It grunts.
Oh, yeah. The pigeon grunts at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the risk you always take in getting a pet that... You know, they're not all... We were really spoiled with our first dog, Casey. We had her for 14 years. She was the best lab. And we've always wanted another dog eventually. But as the years go on, we hear other people's horror stories about pets. We're like, I don't know. And even if it's not a horror story, just the things you forget about. Not just the cleaning up after the pet, shall we say. There's the thing with a dog where nothing wakes you up faster than hearing a dog going, you are out of bed so fast to get that dog outside. And of course, it never on a bare floor. Always right on the carpet.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. You don't always know what you're getting.
No. You know what my dog did yesterday?
What is your dog?
I get home and my mom goes, so the dog, he woke up and he was like whining and crying for like a couple of minutes. I don't know what that was. And his paw was like, stuck out straight. We figure what happened is he slept wrong and his foot fell asleep.
And the dog doesn't know that.
Dog doesn't know.
Like my foot, it's falling off. My paw is gone.
Uh-huh. All right, dog.
That's what makes it so fun. You know, there's parallels to parenthood I really don't want to get into either. Like, you know. You think you're raising a kid one way, and then, suddenly it's, can I drop you off at the pet shelter? You know, regardless. Let's get to sports here before I get into any more trouble. The fans who may have tuned out after the first inning of last night's Brewers-Cubs game, let last night's game be a reminder of why you play all nine innings and you don't give up after one. Yes, Jacob Mizorowski had a memorably horrible first inning, giving up three runs, not with hits so much as a wild pitch and a wild throw to first. The Cubs fans in the crowd were going wild, and it was depressing to watch. Were you catching it as well?
I lucky for me, I saw the entire game, actually.
Lucky for you? Okay.
Yeah, I...
Yeah, so did I. After facing eight batters in the first inning, Mizorowski settled down. He set down the Cubs 1-2-3 in the second, the third, and the fourth innings. 10 batters in a row after that horrible start. 7 strikeouts total. The Brewer bats came alive with home runs by Andrew Vaughn, Sal Frelick, a 2-run shot by Christian Yelich, his 20th of the year, to put the cherry on top of a very satisfying comeback win over the Cubs, 8-4. Game 2 of that series is coming up tonight, and again, the pregame starts at 6:05 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Brewers Cubs, it's great stuff.
Win the series.
What's that?
Win the series. Come on.
Win the series. Come on, guys. More after this. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
There's no shortage of ways to describe the ways in which the Trump mega bill is predominantly geared toward corporations and the very wealthy. There is a massive cut to the corporate income tax rate that is made permanent. There have been multiple analyses on the bill that show that, for example, the people in the bottom 20% of earners will see a 0.5% increase in their after-tax income compared to about five times that amount for people in the top 20%. But not everybody knows that. And so that's what led to a discussion that I held yesterday with a gentleman who runs a group that's putting up billboards all around the country, including here in Wisconsin. Let's visit now with Faz Shakir. He's the founder and executive director of the media organization, More Perfect Union. Faz, thank you for being here, by the way. Let's start with a description of what More Perfect Union is.
Well, Pat, we launched this thing in 2021, and we're a media organization of, by, and for working class people to tell the stories of economic justice through their lens. You know, when I launched in 2021, I had just come off of managing Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign, and I felt that there was a challenge of trying to tell the stories of real working class lives in this environment in which we feel like the perspectives of the wealthy is really captured in a lot of traditional media outlets. Whether if you're watching CNBC or reading the Wall Street Journal, they're really often telling you the perspective of the C-suite, the executives, the share, the big shareholders. And you know, my frustration has long been, but what about like if you're an Amazon worker who's organizing? What if you're a national park ranger who's having to go about your job and the struggles of what you're trying to deal with in this modern economy? So the goal of the organization is just tell the stories of working class people and try to tie those to solutions.
Well, we were just noting on our show yesterday, on Wednesday, that is the 60th anniversary of Medicare and Medicaid, and the number of Amazon workers and McDonald's workers and Walmart workers who are also on Medicaid is astonishing. And I don't think people are necessarily aware of it. Similarly, the billboards you're putting up tell a story for something that I think some of us take for granted, but many people still don't know about the budget cuts in the Trump mega bill. And how they're not necessarily savings. This is essentially a transfer of wealth. Is that pretty much the story behind the billboards?
They are takings, right, Pat? So that's right. And so the billboards that you're referring to say, we make, they take. And the takings that we're referring to here are Medicaid, people on Medicaid who are working. I mean, the great mythology, as you're referencing, is that somehow people on Medicaid, Medicare are not working, or haven't earned these benefits. The real truth of them is if you work 20 hours at Dollar General, right? Who's stopping you from working 40, 45 hours at Dollar General? It's often Dollar General. The bosses are. A lot of workers are trying to get to a place where they're earning more and having more benefits. If you're driving Uber 30 hours a week, Uber isn't giving you health care. They aren't giving you retirement benefits. So a lot of these major corporations are saddling the federal government with the responsibility of providing health care, providing any degree of retirement to working class people, and they're making billions of dollars. So in our view, here you got a bill that says, well, we're going to give tax breaks to the richest in this country because they are the great creators of our economy. They need more money. And what they have been doing with this money is literally taking away health care and retirement. That is what Amazon kind of created, right? As the modern economy is, we're going to have thousands of workers and none of them will have healthcare. None of them will have decent retirement benefits. So they are literally taking now at this stage the actual little healthcare that many of these workers had.
Well, it's like I was saying for the Medicaid anniversary, there's 71 million Americans on it. And a lot of Republicans say, well, see how big that number is. So many people that say their income is low enough to qualify for Medicaid, which to me begs the question, then why don't we do something if so many Americans make so little that they qualify for Medicaid? This is as much a wage problem as it is a healthcare issue.
And an easy solution that's frustrated me for a long time is you want to compel McDonald's, which has tons of franchisees. Again, it's a problem with having a major corporation that is largely executed through franchises. You have Uber, you have Amazon, you have Dollar General, a lot of these, Walmart, a lot of these companies that are billions of dollars in profits. And why not compel them? You have to provide healthcare to your employees. You have to provide a retirement benefit to your point. You remember, Pat, we're just a few decades ago where that was the assumption. If you were going to go work at a major corporation, you were going to get a decent benefit that raised the standards of everyone. And now, of course, you know, you got union busting all over the place. You got companies trying to exploit workers in every which way possible. And now they are refusing to provide even the basic minimum of what you need to live. And now you're right that there's been a transfer, right? So the federal government's owning more and more of this responsibility. And now the Republicans say, well, oh, it's just growing so much. We have to take it away. Well, you could compel the corporations of America, provide health care to your employees. This would solve a major problem.
The billboard campaign was announced to be launched across 9 states, including boards in Milwaukee. Is that still the case, or has the campaign changed at all since the initial rollout?
No, you got it right, Pat. We're going to try to be as many places as we can, trying to tell a story that's more than just the anti-Trump perspective. I think a lot of people got that, right? That Trump has a certain vision and ideology, and he's executed now this twice, right? First tax bill, now second tax bill, this first term, now second term. So I think people got that sense. But what we're trying to do is also make sure that there's a narrative and a story of who is benefiting. And it's not just Donald Trump, right? It's the beneficiaries are these wealthy people that you see. And we mentioned, you know, Musk is one of them. Bezos is another. Zuckerberg. These are the people who've really thrown in with Trump and are now getting the return of their business model thriving under Donald Trump.
And yeah, those billboards, they do have the different billionaire CEOs. You mentioned Musk and Zuckerberg and Bezos. Peter Thiel from PayPal is on there as well. Have they essentially made themselves the public face of this transfer of wealth? I mean, do you feel, I think Elon Musk is a pretty easy one. Because of his role with the Trump administration. But between the four of them on there, do you feel like that creates the best narrative for the middle class who drive by these billboards to understand the way wealth is moving toward those four individuals, among others?
Well, at least three of them, you'll remember, you know, Elon and Bezos and Zuckerberg were sitting right behind Donald Trump as he was inaugurated. They volunteered that we, you know, the billionaire class, are throwing in with this guy and are so proud of it that we're going to sit right here and feel like we have a degree of ownership over the direction of this country. And to my mind, it's trying to pull this a little bit out of the partisan politics. I would hope that more people see and understand the major problem we have is, you know, Bezos would love to buy the Democratic Party too, right? It isn't just like he's got the opportunity with the Republican Party because they got the trifecta. They own the presidency, the Republican Senate, and the Republican House. So that's where he's going to be spending his money, his effort, his energies to try to extract gains for himself. But if the tides were to turn, he would also love, and has in the past, given money to try to purchase, you know, a direction of a Democratic side or any other side. And it's the job of people who want to serve in public office to operate with integrity and fight for people beyond themselves. That is really, to my mind, the meaning of being in public life, that you are willing to use power and authority to fight for other people besides yourself. And we are in a state, sadly, Pat, where like there's a lack of integrity. The corruption of a system, both politically and economically, is at heightened levels. And I think we're all hunting and searching for the people who want to be willing to take on powerful actors, know that it's going to be painful, but do it with integrity on behalf of actual working class folks.
We're talking with Faz Shakir. He's the founder and executive director of the media organization More Perfect Union, which has launched a billboard campaign in Wisconsin and other states about the Trump mega bill and the tax cuts for billionaires. This is not your first billboard campaign, if I'm not mistaken, that you've also called out the Doge cuts earlier. And do you already have something in mind for where you're going from here to keep these issues top of mind for Americans as they see these billboards?
Yeah, well, in my view, you know, a lot of these billboards have been put up in places that are, you know, we'll call red or, you know, purple, at least, you know, places where they are not core Democratic voters. They're trying to speak to people who may have voted a different way. And the first billboards that you mentioned were about the cuts to national park rangers and national park staff and really unnecessary, heinous efforts to attack people who, in my mind, serve as the best ethos of America. And I was talking about integrity with you before, Pat, right? Here's National Park Service staff whose job, they don't make tons of money off these jobs. They do these to improve your standard of living as you come into a national park. National parks are available to all people, regardless of income. Great thing that we want to maintain. And yet Doge said, oh, this is a place we want to go after. And I thought when we did the first billboard campaign, there were a lot of Republicans concerned, say, hey, you know, I like Donald Trump. I like some of the things he's doing. This is a step way too far for me. And I'm trying to own that persuasion mindset in this moment. I can appreciate and respect that people will vote for Trump, vote for Republicans for a whole host of reasons. But I want to explain it. on the issues of class and who fights for working people. It is, in my view, the issue of our time. And it is the issue that is often least covered in, through traditional media, thanks to you and others who are trying to do it through alternative forms of media. And it requires like having a, you know, trying to get messages through to folks who, because they aren't ordinarily going to see it. They aren't ordinarily going to hear about, oh, you know, DOGE cuts on National Park staff, or they're not going to hear about, oh, Jeff Bezos is making out like a robber baron with his tax bill. I want to make sure, you know, as we get through the course of the next, you know, few years, that class-based conversations are had.
And it's beyond the billboards as well. I note that on your YouTube channel, it notes that you're an Emmy-winning nonprofit newsroom. You can go to More Perfect Union on YouTube and see all the other multimedia ways that you're trying to get this message out.
That is the principal way we try to get this message out. I have a staff of 35 people, and we do journalism every day. We're all over the country trying to tell stories of, you know, data centers right now. For instance, they're taking over a lot of communities and towns, pilfering the water, pilfering electricity, raising energy costs on working class people. Also, all just so Elon Musk can create Grok, or, you know, that we can have some kind of AI chatbot. You know, like really to screw with workers that in that way, we really have a fundamental problem of too few actors have way too much power. And you see this particularly in big tech. With the onset of AI, and our job at More Perfect Union is just to make sure we are telling the stories from those who are getting screwed right now, and to suggest there could be a different way, a better way.
Apart from the YouTube channel, is there anything else that you would like to motivate people to do if they see the billboards, if they see the videos?
Well, I'd love for them to sign up on our email list. I mean, if you go to perfectunion.us, you'll see our website there, and you can sign up for our email list there. And then also all our other channels. We're on TikTok, Instagram, all the major platforms. And thankfully we're doing quite well with views and, you know, growing very well at this point in time. But I would love even more support, please.
Faz Shakir, founder and executive director of More Perfect Union. Thank you again for your time. We appreciate it.
You're kind to have me. Thank you, Pat.
A couple of more notes on, again, the impact of this bill on taxes, because we've talked so much about in generalities. But here are the numbers as the bill has been studied. From the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, nearly 60% of the tax cut benefits go to the top 20% of incomes. So 60% of the benefits going to people earning $217,000 and above. You know, millionaires and billionaires. And then Penn Wharton looked at a budget model with an impact on lifetime income. Once you figure in the effect of cuts to Medicaid and food assistance, households in the bottom 20% will experience a lifetime value of loss of $27,500. By contrast, in the top 20%, they will gain value of $65,000. And then what about the folks right in the middle? Well, you'll get a slight, maybe $500 benefit lifetime from the tax cuts. But if you need any of those programs that are being cut, you are going to be out of luck. A local update is next for some of you. Others, some more news and notes from here on Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll be talking about the 60th anniversary of Medicare and Medicaid in just a sec. But first, this is what you could call a bifurcated show. We play on various levels at the same time. You could call this the 3D chess of radio shows. And what I mean by that is that all along the 10 stations that we're on and the Civic Media Radio Network across the state of Wisconsin, a few times throughout the show, some of the local stations will break away and have a local news update, but some of us will continue to jibber-jabber here out of Chippewa Falls and talk about other issues. And then we have the opportunity to play that back later the next day for folks who maybe didn't get to hear it the first time. Maybe they were away, or maybe there was a local update, which begs this question. Hey, Pat, how can I always hear what you're doing on here? Here's what you do. You get us as a podcast as well. Go to Spotify and subscribe, follow the program. You can do it at Apple or any place else as well. And that way, if you hear that we've talked to somebody and you missed it and you want to come back to it, very easy to do right there on your device. So, for example, we have a new segment at 7:50 on Tuesday mornings called Way Up North, where we have a rotating series of guests from Superior, Ashland, Bayfield, you know, the whole Lake Superior, South Shore area. And yesterday we talked to State Representative Angela Strout, who is a freshman lawmaker going through her first state budget process. And so here's part of our conversation about her impressions on the budget and why she was a no vote on it. But first, I asked her to comment on the announcement that Governor Tony Evers would not be running for a third term next year.
You know, I really didn't know in the days leading up whether he was going to run or not. People said, what's your gut feeling? And I'm like, don't have one. I'm really 50-50 on it. Tony Evers is a true public servant. He's not one who was in this for ego, not one who had a really hard time letting go of power, I think. And so he did this to serve. He really served well. He, you know, two terms is a lot for a governor. It's a really hard job. He deserves to spend time with his family. He's a truly decent person who I think just wants to go back and be a grandpa and a husband and live life and enjoy it. So I'm really happy for him that he gets to do that and grateful for his service.
And now we get into the mixed bag of politics, and that is to be thankful for his service, but he has faced a fair share of criticism, as have others who are part of the state budget process, that it didn't turn out the way that perhaps it could have, depending on how people use their leverage or their negotiating skills or what have you. And the, you know, you going through the state budget process for the first time, is it fair to say it wasn't the most positive experience now that you've seen how the sausage is made firsthand?
That is very fair to say. This is not how you should run a state. And, you know, there are people involved in these negotiations who I would refer to them as lions, but that's an insult to lions. they're willing to do whatever it takes to retain power, hold on to power, get what they want. And so, you know, I said Tony Evers is a truly decent person. That's not true of many of the people he's negotiating with. And so it's a really, really difficult thing to watch, the budget process. It is not good governance. Things thrown in at the last minute that could never pass if they had to go through the regular legislative process. It's disturbing, and it's not how I hope we do things in the future. But if it is how we do things, then Democrats need to get really savvy about making it work for us and making the best choices we possibly can in a context where we don't always control the rules.
Yeah, especially when you consider that the state budget bill, that's the one bill that must pass, you know, theoretically. And so it gets so much shoved into it that, like you say, would never pass as a standalone measure. For me, the most obvious of those would be the voucher school program. In 30 years, until 2 years ago, it never was up as a standalone bill. It was always crammed into a budget bill, and that's how it got to be the behemoth that it is now. So we have the model that we're going to have for a while yet, and it is a matter of, again, how you're using leverage in negotiations. But now that that window is closed for this session, what are your priorities in terms of, you know, trailer bills, follow-up bills, or just, you know, separate legislation that you want to be working on?
There's so much. I mean, there's big picture stuff. You know, a lot of what Democrats are doing right now is preparing to govern after the next election. We know Robin Voss is not going to move any Democratic idea forward in the assembly. That's just a fact. He's made that very clear. And so what we're doing now is setting the groundwork for when dynamics change. I mean, we'll keep trying. There's no quit in Assembly Democrats. But and so for me, there are good governance issues to work on. There are specific pieces of legislation around air quality and environmental issues. There's specific legislation around the UW system. And so I'm working on a range of things. For me, it's always district specific. And, you know, the 73rd has some problems to solve, and that's what I'm here for.
So there again was State Representative Angela Strout talking to us on the program yesterday in our Way Up North segment. Now let's turn our attention to the calendar and this Wednesday, July 30th, which marks the 60th anniversary of when President Lyndon Johnson signed the Social Security Act of 1965 into law establishing Medicare and Medicaid. And I think until recently, it was a huge percentage of people that did not really have a clear idea of the difference between Medicare and Medicaid. They sound like these bureaucratic words that get jumbled a lot. And I think more recently, because of the threat to those programs, people are becoming a bit more understanding of the differences between them. Medicare. That's America's promise to its workers that after a lifetime of work, you will have access to health care and not have to worry about illness or injury causing poverty in your old age. 66 million Americans are currently served by Medicare. Medicaid is an American promise of compassion, that those with disabilities will not have to beg on street corners for the health care they need, and that those who fall on tough times will have at least one option for stable, affordable health care when all of the other for-profit private insurance corporations would rather reject you or bleed you dry with jacked-up premiums. Now, there are those who say that the 71 million Americans on Medicaid, well, that's too many. I say, why isn't every American deserving of stable, affordable health care? After all, they have figured it out in every other developed country, and in many of those countries, they now have longer lifespans. They have fewer moms and babies dying. They have better education outcomes. So to the MAGA folks who support the Trump big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill, and it's $930 billion, almost $1 trillion of upcoming cuts to Medicaid, because they say too many folks are claiming low enough incomes to qualify. I ask simply, why is that the case in America? In the richest nation on earth, why aren't we doing more to address why so many Americans have incomes low enough to qualify for Medicaid? Why are people who work full-time jobs for some of America's biggest corporations still making so little in pay that they qualify for Medicaid, that our taxes subsidize their health care? Why are the corporations and the billionaires behind them sticking us with the bill? Walmart made $19 billion in profit last year, and a big chunk of its workers make pay low enough to qualify that they're on Medicaid. McDonald's made $8 billion in profit. That's pure profit. And yet has a big chunk of its workers making low enough wages to qualify for Medicaid. Amazon, $59 billion. And still, so many Amazon workers are on Medicaid, coverage that we pay for, that they don't pay for, that they don't pay for health insurance that covers their workers. How could that be? Well, they make big campaign contributions, and they've got people in Congress looking out for them, carving out exemptions. According to the Government Accountability Office, nearly half of adult Medicaid enrollees, 48%, and a little more than half of SNAP beneficiaries, 51%, who get what we used to call food stamps. Okay, about half of adult Medicaid enrollees, about half of SNAP beneficiaries work at least 35 hours a week. And more than half of them work for large companies, meaning 100 or more employees. So it's not that they're working for some tiny business that can't afford health insurance. These companies can. They choose not to. I mean, Republicans cannot stop talking about their glee about adding work requirements to Medicaid, and yet it's clear that lots of working Americans are already on Medicaid, and the ones who aren't can't. The people who love to talk about getting rid of red tape for corporations have become masters of putting red tape in the way of health care through work requirements and all kinds of other paperwork for children, for families, for the disabled, for the elderly, all while cutting red tape and taxes for the very wealthy. So if indeed there are deadbeats, and I don't doubt that there are, but where's the enforcement? Seriously, where? We talked about this with Elon Musk and Doge as well. It is a crime to defraud the government, to defraud the taxpayers. Why isn't this administration frankly, doing more perp walks. Instead of sending its U.S. attorneys and federal prosecutors against its political enemies, why isn't it making a show of the alleged welfare queens that they say are out there? Because paying for enforcement would mean increasing the budget to an agency, even if it's for the right thing. After all, look at the IRS. What are they cutting there? They're cutting enforcement so that people can continue at high income levels to cheat the system. Whereas if you beefed up enforcement against tax cheats, and if you beefed up enforcement against people who are defrauding Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, or anything else, you'd have a public that was grateful rather than fearful. Look, we've had 60 years to make Medicaid stronger. Instead, it's about to get a lot weaker. We've had 15 years to make the Affordable Care Act stronger. Instead, it's about to get a lot weaker. We've had 20 years to make Medicare Part D stronger. And instead, prescription drug prices are about to get a lot higher. And on top of all of that, on Medicare's side of the equation, there's Medicare Advantage, something that we've talked about previously, with those slick commercials, often with celebrities, that say, choose our Medicare Advantage plan because we have so many more bells and whistles. Medicare Advantage is a way for private for-profit insurance companies to get in on the action. They promise all kinds of extra benefits, but what you get instead are networks, like the old HMOs, and God forbid you try to go out of network because you'll pay more or you'll get denied your coverage. And you get more denials of coverage under Medicare Access anyway. I mean, there are many who say that Medicare Advantage has turned out to be one big taxpayer scam, and who am I to disagree with them? All told, we are about to see 12 million Americans lose access to affordable health insurance, either through cuts to Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act. And it's not like that happens in a vacuum. When they go without stable, affordable health care, when some of us go without that, the rest of us have to pay for that. So, happy birthday, Medicaid and Medicare. Hopefully we can make you live up to your promise sometime in the near future, if you're not killed off in the meantime. Today's history lesson is next. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Could we have timed that out any better? Talking about Andrew Vaughn.
Isn't that
and
great?
And referring to him as Wild Thing. And that, by the way, that was a Luke Mathers thing. He didn't know what was in today's history lesson when he suggested Wild Thing for Vaughn. And yet, on this day in 1966, the Trogs hit number one. The number one song in the country 59 years ago today was Wild Thing by the Trogs. Welcome to today's history lesson for this Wednesday. If it's Wednesday, it's Melissa Kay, our friend from 97.5 WFHR, 105.5 WIRI in Wisconsin Rapids, with her co-guest host, Lilu, sitting somewhere off camera. Yes. Melissa Kay, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you too.
How is Lilu doing?
Lilu's good. I'm learning how to talk to them.
You're learning how to talk to Lilu?
Yes.
With coons, right?
Yeah, yes, but I thought it was like a purr, but that's actually
no, that's
like
a cat. That would scare the bird. Now I see why it's hiding in the cave.
No, it's more like a hoo, hoo, hoo. Oh, okay. That's how you say hello, or I'm here.
Okay. And can we have an update on the pigeon pants? Have they been modeled yet?
No.
Okay, all right.
We're waiting to make contact at their comfort level.
Yes.
Unless they have to trim their nails, which I might have to trim their nails very soon, and that could be traumatic for both of us.
I was going to say, that could be, that could put you in the category of Hampton, the hamster. You didn't by chance hear us talking about the hamster yesterday at the Chippewa Humane Association.
No, I did not.
Let me remind me to send a clip of that your way. That's
okay. The best story I've ever heard.
It might be your next rescue. You've rescued a pigeon. You might be rescuing this hamster.
They would just not be friends.
Don't put it in the same area as Lilu. That's all we're saying. All right.
Okay.
Back to today's history lesson. Then Melissa's going to tell us about some remotes coming up at WFHR. But on this day in 1974, President Nixon had to release subpoenaed White House recordings, secret recordings in the Oval Office, after being ordered to do so by the U.S. Supreme Court. A little more than a week later, Nixon would have to resign. On this day in 1966, we told you the number one single was Wild Thing. The number one album was the Beatles album Yesterday and Today.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for now.
And you're saying, I'm not familiar with the Yesterday and Today album. Well, there's a reason why. The way they did Beatles albums in the U.S. were not the same as the U.K., and a lot of the albums on Yesterday and Today were actually already on the albums Help, Rubber Soul, and the forthcoming Revolver. But that particular U.S. Beatles album hit number one this day in 1966. The song Enter Sandman was released this day in 1991 as a single, serving as a preview of Metallica's forthcoming Black Album. Was the Black Album by any chance a part of your collection there, Melissa?
Heck no. I mean, I like it now, but no, then I would never have been able to listen to that.
Well, okay, so you weren't at that end of the spectrum. Let's go to the complete opposite end and wish a happy 84th birthday to singer Paul Anka.
Wow, I just got whiplash.
Yeah, my neck hurts. Happy birthday to Bud Selig, 91 years old today. Kate Bush is 67 years old today. Arnold Schwarzenegger is 78. Lawrence Fishburne, 64. Actress Lisa Kudrow is 62. Vivica A. Fox is 61 today. Terry Crews is 57. And one more birthday, Frank Stallone. Do you remember Frank Stallone by chance? Sylvester Stallone's brother? He too was an actor and a singer, and he had what you're about to hear here is the quintessential intro to an 80s song from birthday boy Frank Stallone. Frank?
Uh-huh.
There we go. Man, if this doesn't scream 1983, nothing will.
This rocks.
Oh my gosh.
This is from the 1983 film Staying Alive, the sequel to Saturday Night Fever, which makes today the day I learned or relearned that there was a sequel to Saturday Night Fever. You've moved the camera over to Lilu. What is there motion
they
over there?
Out of their cave.
Lilu, look at that.
I see them.
Yeah.
Frank Stallone, you've done it. Apparently, Lilu is a fan of 1980s quintessential rock. Hair bands and leg warmers, which makes sense.
Hungry.
They're kind of like pigeon pants. or Lilu is hungry. Yes, could go either way. This is a big moment. Although, again, the light is so harsh. Oh, flapping the wings and everything.
Yeah, those are happy
wow.
flaps.
Those are very happy flaps. This is great. I feel like Jane Goodall, and I've finally seen one of the apes come out and, you know, smile or something.
Aww. Lilu has made their radio debut.
Oh, Lilu.
Good job, Lilu.
Good job. Well, there you go. You now know. You now know what does it. It's 80s music. Jimmy Hoffa disappeared this day in 1975 from a parking lot of a restaurant in suburban Detroit, never seen nor heard from again. That's today's history lesson. Let's find out what is happening in Wisconsin Rapids Radio. What else are you up to over there, Melissa?
Well, we do have a huge, big remote this Saturday for the Rapids Rumble. Rapids Car
the
Cruise.
Rapids Rumble?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a car Rapids cruise. Rumble okay, car I thought cruise. It was like the anchor fight in Anchorman or something like that.
It's where the east meets the west at the river.
Okay, gotcha.
I know, it used to be a thing, but
yes.
No, it's a big car cruise. shows. We'll be at the MSTC, the Mid-State Technical College grounds, I believe, is where we'll be set up. We'll be doing the live remote there. There's food. There's tons of cars. And the cruise will leave at 5 p.m., but it's an all-day thing. It starts at 8.
Wow. So, all right.
It's a big deal.
Sounds like a big deal. A lot of fun. Yep. All right. Yep. Well, Melissa and Lilu, what an exciting segment this was. Thank you. Go cue up some 80s music, maybe Fame or Splash Dance or Flash Dance, and we'll get an update next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Melissa. Have a great day. In our next hour, we'll be talking to a couple of folks from the Chippewa Falls School District about declining enrollment and what it's doing to budgets in school districts across Wisconsin. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.